Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
Hell yeah! Yeah, right!
Yesterday evening, as the Ole Miss Rebels had to use the bottom of the ninth inning to take a midweek game from Arkansas State. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more in today's edition of Rebel Rise Live. I'm David Johnson, your host, along with co-host Michael Quirk and Dave Bevan, and we hope you all are having a great Thursday. Joining us a little bit later on in this podcast, thanks to Michael Quirk setting this up, will be one of the Ole Miss Rebels all-time diamond greats, David DeLucci, and we're certainly excited about David joining us in today's podcast. Should be a whole lot of fun spending a little bit of time with him. All right, Michael, last night at Swayze, Ole Miss took it down to the very last second before finally leaving with a 4-3 win over Arkansas State. In these midweek games, while not a lot of emphasis seems to be placed on them, and not by the team, but by the fans early in the season, can come back to haunt you when it comes time for the NCAA to hand out regional sites and things such as that, and seedings in the NCAA tournament. An important win for Ole Miss last night to come from behind to knock off Arkansas State. Michael, you were there in the ballpark. Kind of set the scene for us.
I got there about a little over an hour before first pitch, and it was counted, I think, six cleaning people and about three patrons when I got there, and the crowd didn't really bulk up too much over the next hour either. It was a freezing cold night. There were a lot of folks that were expecting rain. The rain never came, fortunately, but yeah, it was sort of a weird atmosphere in the ballpark. There had to be, I would say, less than 200 fans in attendance. And so it was sort of a strange night, not a lot of energy in the park. And it was absolutely freezing on the field. The winds were going up to 21 miles an hour. And the Rebels were just a little sluggish. They had some unfortunate luck. Got some bad bounces on a deep triple that scored the go-ahead run to make it 3-2 for the Red Wolves. That 2-0 lead, a couple things go ASU's way, which allows that to happen. And ASU has taken advantage of some opportunities. But luckily, Henry Lartigue hits a sort of routine fly ball with two outs and two runners on who are both moving on the pitch. And he drops it, which allows two runs to score. And then Ole Miss gets some really clutch hits at the end with a RBI single from Tate Blackman on a 3-2, two-out pitch in the bottom of the eighth inning. And then, of course, a leadoff double, which eventually comes around to score in the bottom of the ninth. And, you know, baseball, you need to win games when you have your best stuff and when you don't have your best stuff. And on good weather days, bad weather days, and so it's good to see Ole Miss sort of, you know, get tested and come out with a clutch win, because this past weekend they weren't really tested. They won all the games pretty comfortably when the offense was working, when really everything was working for them, and so it was definitely a good win for the psyche for the Rebels last night.
And of course, this sets the stage for this mammoth series this weekend in Oxford between 21st-ranked Ole Miss and number 2 Louisville, where the Rebels can really make a statement on the national scene if they take this series from the Louisville Cardinals, which, you know, again, the excitement for this baseball series, particularly when it's the month of February, a little unusual in that it's almost palpable. Ole Miss fans can't wait to get Louisville into Swayze and perhaps send the preseason prognosticators a message, as we talked about yesterday. Well, and again, I want to remind you, David DiLucci, one of the all-time Ole Miss baseball great, former major leaguer, now turned broadcaster, will be joining us a little bit later on in the podcast, so be sure to stick around for that. Meanwhile, the attention of the football world is centered on Indianapolis, Indiana, as the NFL Combine has gotten underway. The testing, some of it will start today and it'll go through tomorrow. Laramie Tunsil taking the podium yesterday for the first time, as I guess, as an NFL player, though he hasn't been drafted yet. And I thought Laramie handled his media interview very, very well. Short answers, but he injected a little bit of humor into his commentary. And, you know, the word right now is that the Tennessee Titans are seriously considering taking Laramie Tunsil with the number one pick in the NFL draft. They need more protection for quarterback Marcus Mariota, and Tunsil was asked about that, and he basically said, I'll do everything I can to protect Marcus Mariota if the Titans take me in the first round. San Diego Chargers also are salivating over the possibility of taking Tunsil, I believe, with what would be the third overall pick. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens with Laramie and whether or not he can go as the first overall pick. If he does, Ole Miss would become the 17th school to have multiple players taken with the first pick overall in the NFL draft. So we'll see what Laramie does when he runs. He joked around. Someone asked him what he wanted to run in the 40. He said, don't you know I'm a receiver? I want to run about a 4.5. And he fell out laughing. But he said realistically he'd love to run a 4.8, 4.9, 40 at the NFL Combine. He will, unlike Laquon Treadwell, do all of the events, all of the testing. Of course, Treadwell not going to run the 40-yard dash. Dave, your thoughts on Tennessee, the Titans, taking Tunsil with the first overall pick. Do you think Laramie Tunsil is a guy that they should roll the dice on and draft an offensive lineman with the first pick?
Well, it's definitely a wise choice if Tennessee were to select Tunsil. If you go back to the early predictions in the NFL draft, it was Joey Bosa, you know, Ohio State pass rusher. You know, that's another area that is on Tennessee's mind right now, concern. But these recent mock drafts are showing Bosa falling down the ranks a little bit. And everything that I've seen, David, just researching points to Tunsil being selected by Tennessee. And the report from what I've read from, you know, like a Mel Kiper's report is Tunsil, in their opinion, is a once-in-a-lifetime franchise offensive tackle. And if Tennessee were to select Tunsil, well, then you have a two-year NFL left tackle currently with Tyler Lewan, and being able to move him over, he is a versatile tackle. Laramie would be the perfect fit for a left tackle. You could slide Lewan over to that right tackle position. Then you've got, you know, two very highly talented tackles protecting Mariota next season.
Okay. And as we mentioned, Laramie stood before the NFL media yesterday, and I thought he did a well accounting for himself. They asked him everything. They asked him if he considered possibly just foregoing his junior season at Ole Miss due to the 7-game NCAA suspension. I thought his answer was an incredible answer, where he said basically, you know, he was not in any frame of mind to want to leave his teammates, that they are his brothers. And I think that certainly scored him some points with NFL executives listening to his explanation as to why he just didn't back it in with the 7-game suspension and start focusing on getting ready for the NFL. Instead, a good sense of team shown by Laramie Tunsil, some unselfishness there, and that'll probably bode well for his stock as these NFL general managers and their war room teams decide who they're going to spend their millions on. Now, while Laramie Tunsil did a wonderful accounting of himself today, it is expected that Robert Kim Dicci will step before the NFL media at Indianapolis. And, Michael, I can only imagine some of the questions that will be thrown at Robert Kyndici, because, folks, this is a press conference. It's not going to be controlled by a sports information director. You're not going to have friendly media types out there in the audience. This is the NFL media pool, and they're going to flat out ask him about falling, jumping, whatever happened out of that Atlanta hotel room. You can imagine that is going to be addressed. That is going to be asked, and it'll be interesting to see what Robert's reply is. And unlike Laramie Tunsil, Robert Kyndici didn't finish the season at Ole Miss, basically suspended for the Sugar Bowl, which effectively ended his career, and certainly let his teammates down, even though his presence was not required in the big victory over Oklahoma State. But again, that's something that factors in when these business types of the NFL are deciding who gets the multi-million dollar contract. So, Michael, I mean, how do you think Robert will address that today when he's asked that in Indianapolis before the world about his off-the-field incidents, drug possession charges, things of that nature? I mean, what's the comeback for Robert Kyndici?
Well, I heard from Indianapolis that Robert Kyndici is letting his spiritual advisor and Tibetan Sherpa answer any and all questions directed his way. So that will make things easier. But really, it's going to be difficult for him to. It's hard to explain that mistake, one, but two, it's a lot harder when, like we talked about yesterday, right after that happens, you're at a Ground Zero in Clarksdale, playing the saxophone, dressed up like John Belushi. I mean, that really doesn't show a whole lot of remorse, a whole lot of, you know, all right, I need to get things together. That just shows, you know, it's not gonna look good to a lot of NFL executives, and they've definitely seen it. If we've seen it, they've seen it, And so it's going to be really hard for Robert to explain, and hopefully he's gotten some good counseling from agents and publicists and really everyone for that matter on how to handle this, because some changes have to be made in Robert Kyndici's life, and he's going to have to convince everyone there, you know, he's made those changes and that he's going to be able to be trusted with millions and millions of dollars. And isn't going to be smoking anything and everything when he's not at the facility. So we'll see. It'll certainly be interesting to see what he conjures up and how he explains himself and whether that's enough for some of those front office folks.
Well, let's hope he buys a minivan as opposed to a red Ferrari right off the bat. That might keep him out of a little bit of trouble. But, you know, for those of you who have never talked to Robert or spent any time with him, I will say this. He has an infectious personality, and he handles the media pretty well. He gives a really good interview. Some of the stuff that he says leaves you scratching your head, some yin and yang kind of philosophy that he'll weave in every now and then, but he's got some skills as far as dealing with the media. That's been my experience with him. He's very accommodating, so we'll see. 247 Sports, Steve Hellwagon is up there, and hopefully, like yesterday, Steve will shoot me some video back, and we'll have a full accounting of Robert Kyndici's encounter with the NFL media later on today. Laquan Treadwell, I do believe he'll go before the media today as well. He's certainly going to be asked about his decision to not run the 40 at the NFL Combine. And I got to tell you guys, you know, I don't blame him. I don't think Laquan Treadwell is he's not a burner. We all know that. And I don't think he helps his stock at all by running the 40 at the NFL Combine. He is a football player. And, you know, Rick Cleveland wrote a great column about this yesterday for the Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame, and he used an old Archie Cooley quote, the former Mississippi Valley State head coach that coached Jerry Rice in college, and Rice ran something like a 4.7 or even a 4.8 at the NFL Combine. And And Cooley's response to that was, nobody was chasing him. You know, watch his film, see what he does as a football player. And I thought that was a really good piece by Rick Cleveland, and I think that's applicable to Laquan Treadwell. You know, he's a football player first and foremost, and his blocking ability. And Laramie Tunsil talked about that yesterday. He said, "You show me another wide receiver." I'm paraphrasing here, that blocks and enjoys blocking like Laquan Treadwell, and that's kind of one of those unsung skills. You know, that won't be talked about a lot. You watch ESPN and they'll show his pass catching and his route running and all of that stuff. But Laquan Treadwell will take your head off downfield blocking. And that's an attribute there that will certainly be appreciated in the NFL. So all of that going on. Cody Core also up there, as well as C.J. Johnson and Fan Cooper. Most of that stuff will be televised, so you can catch that on the family of ESPN channels over the next couple of days, and then we will effort to give you a full accounting for how all of the Ole Miss players are performing in front of the NFL scouts at the NFL Combine. Okay, spring practice getting started. We're less than a week away. No official announcement yet, but what I'm hearing through the grapevine is next Wednesday the Rebels will begin spring practice. I think they're going to get 6 practices in before spring break, come back and finish up with 9 and some kind of glorified scrimmage. It won't be the Grove Bowl. Again, details have not been released. We're waiting to hear, just like everyone else, but I understand 6 practices before spring break, 9 afterwards. And there's a lot of excitement, Dave, around this spring practice. It's not every year that you've got 8 true freshmen going through spring practice, particularly of a class, from a class of this magnitude. And Shea Patterson, I scratch my head on this a little bit. The word is he may be wearing number 20 as the future quarterback of the Ole Miss Rebels. That's interesting. But, Dave, I mean, what do you look for out of these 8 true freshmen this spring when Ole Miss starts mixing it up next week?
Well, it definitely is to see who can come in and make an impact right away. And, you know, they will have that benefit of having that full spring practice before the fall camp, when the rest of the 2016 class comes onto the practice fields for the first time. It's going to be very, very interesting. Patterson is one of now 3 scholarship quarterbacks for Ole Miss, the others being Chad Kelly and Jason Pellerin. It will be interesting to see what Freeze and the staff will find a package for the quarterback situation. And then, you know, as you've mentioned in articles, David, there is the injury recoveries for Robert Conyers and Rod Taylor. So they're going to be out this spring. So the offensive line, it's definitely going to change once the fall comes in. So, you know, those guys, but it will be interesting to see Eli Johnson to come in and start getting those reps as well in the interior part of the offensive line. And then on the defensive side, you've got 2 highly talented defensive linemen and Benito Jones, Charles Wiley, those guys getting some early rep times, and they could come into some roles that could be very critical come the fall.
You know, I'll tell you this from my observation, and you bring up Eli, and of course I see him every day. I don't see everybody else on the team every day, but I do see him every day. And it is absolutely amazing to see how his body has transformed in the 4 weeks that he's been out there in Paul Jackson's strength and conditioning program. You know, I just kind of scratch my head. He's lost about an inch in the waist. He's gained 5 pounds. He's walking through the house with his shirt off the other day, and I'm starting to see abs form in his abdomen region. And, you know, it's just amazing the work that these guys are going through right now and the program that Paul Jackson has them on to be able to kind of physically see those results in such a such a short period of time. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch these new faces. The quarterback situation, while there is no battle for the number one spot, it's going to be interesting to see who leaves spring practice with that number two by their name on the depth chart, Shea Patterson and Jason Pellerin. That's going to be an interesting battle going on out there. I think I know how it will play out. It'll play out with, you know, your post-spring depth chart, Chad Kelly number one, and then number two on the depth chart, it will say Shea Patterson or Jason Pellerin. That's likely what you're going to see. And I think there are going to be packages installed for both of those guys. I do not think Shea Patterson redshirts. I don't think he can. I don't think you can go through a season and only have two quarterbacks ready for game action. You got to have three. And so I think a redshirt for Patterson's out of the question. Therefore, I do think you're going to see some design packages for Shea Patterson, and I think you're going to see some design packages for Jason Pellerin. Now, that won't diminish Chad Kelly as the man by any such standards, you know, you got Pellerin, a 6'4", 235-pound physical specimen back there. You could certainly implement something to take advantage of his girth, so to speak. And I got to tell you, I've never seen a freshman quarterback that looks as college-ready as Shea Patterson. So I think Ole Miss can play the quarterback position in their scheme this year with no fear. I don't think that was the case early on last year. I think things loosened up and they used Chad Kelly to his fullest ability towards the end of the season. But I think there was a little bit of protection mode in some cases going on in the early part of the year. I don't think that has to be in the back of Hugh Freeze and Dan Werner's minds this year from the get-go, because I think they know they've got a guy in Shea Patterson that if anything were to happen to Kelly, and Lord forbid that, that they feel could go out there and bring some similar results. So really a good spot to be in if you're Ole Miss in the quarterback position. There are only three Scholly quarterbacks on the roster, and as we mentioned this week, we think they're going to take two quarterbacks in this class, because when Kelly leaves, that only leaves Patterson and Pellerin, and you're going to have to stock the cupboard a little bit. I think they take one high school guy, one JUCO guy. The high school guy that they want, I think we've identified, is Tristan Gebbia out of Calabasas, California. He was on campus last week. Haven't heard the JUCO name yet, and it's likely going to be a late emerging name. They're going to do their homework. They're going to watch some game action on whoever that guy might be this fall before they pull the trigger, because you really can't afford to miss on the quarterback position very much, so they want to be sure. So good things happening with Ole Miss at the quarterback position. You mentioned the offensive line. They are going without Rod Taylor and without Robert Conyers this spring as both those guys heal up. So it will be a little bit of a hodgepodge front five for Ole Miss on the offensive side of the ball this spring. Alex Givens will man that left tackle spot and get a lot of reps over there. Of course, Greg Little is still in high school out in Allen, Texas, so and he'll be arriving in time for summer workouts and fall camp. And he is the, I would venture out on the limb and say he is the anticipated starter at left tackle. A lot of interesting juggling going on up front on the offensive line. And we'll know a little bit more after spring practice, but we won't know a whole lot more, to be honest with you, until Greg Little gets here and you see how quickly he can insert himself into being an impact blocker up front with Matt Luke's gang of five. So it should be a whole lot of fun, though, and we are looking forward to it. Michael, the Basketball Rebels, we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss them. They got a tough game on the road at Georgia this weekend. And, you know, after knocking Missouri off, in which they had to, it was a must-win. Is this one a must-win as well for Andy Kennedy's crew? Or are we simply at a point where it really doesn't matter what happens here on out? Ole Miss has got to make it to the SEC championship game at least to get on that NCAA bubble.
Yeah, honestly, if the only lock left in the season for Ole Miss getting into the Big Dance is if they win it all on Sunday, and that's Sunday in Nashville. And they put themselves in a really good opportunity, and from what I've seen looking into it, I think they get in if they reach Sunday in Nashville, and if they get to 20 wins at least in the regular season, and then they get to 20 wins, they make it to Sunday in Nashville, that puts them at in a really hot streak. And sort of what Ole Miss is jockeying for right now isn't picking up quality wins, because none of the last three opponents, Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Georgia, none of them are quality opponents. But what they want is to secure that that double bye. The top four teams in the SEC get the double bye. Right now, Kentucky is they're alone on top. And then you have South Carolina and Texas A&M at 10-5. You have Vanderbilt and LSU at 9-6, and then Ole Miss and Florida at 8-7 apiece. So right now they're just a game out of getting that double bye. And the way that they close the season, they have the easiest schedule out of themselves, LSU, Vanderbilt, Florida, and Texas A&M. So they have a position to somehow back their way into a double bye. Of course, you always look at the what if, but if Sebastian Saiz hadn't gone down and they had him for Mississippi State, for South Carolina, obviously they'd be in better position right now. They could be playing for an at-large without having to make it to Sunday, and of course would be in line for a double bye already. They'd be in line for clinching a double bye. But winning these last three games and getting themselves to 11-7 in conference and trying to get a double bye, they've already secured that they're going to get a single bye in the tournament. But right now it's all about jockeying for position. And Georgia just had a rough loss at Auburn. They were getting steamrolled in the first half, down by double digits, and wound up coming back and only losing by three. But that was a real bad loss for Georgia, who was 500 in conference at that point, and dropping that one was a bad loss. So you're going to see them either fiery or dejected on Saturday. We'll see which one.
Hey, but a little bit of a double-edged sword for Ole Miss. Now, it's great to have three remaining SEC regular season games that you could win and that you should win. But at the same time, boy, if you drop one of those, how bad of a loss is that? And then what does that do to change, I guess, the hope projection that they can somehow squeeze into the NCAA as a bubble team?
Yeah, I think, honestly, if they lose to Georgia, it wouldn't be as bad as a Tennessee although Tennessee has some quality wins, but they're still not going to be seen as an okay loss by anyone. A loss to Georgia would not do as much damage as a loss to Mississippi State or Tennessee, which a loss to either of them would secure that Ole Miss, without a doubt, has to win the SEC tournament. Probably with a loss to Georgia, they'll have to win the SEC tournament as well. So right now there's a very slim chance of making it in as an at-large, and they'd have to run the table to keep that chance alive. But all they have to do, and this is something that's been reiterated by Andy Kendi and Stephon Moody and anyone else that gets in front of a microphone at the pavilion, is they just got to keep winning.
And of course, a little background noise to all of this Ole Miss basketball happenings right now is there's a little bit of scuttlebutt up in Memphis that the Memphis Tigers, if they fire Josh Pastner and buy his contract out, which is somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million, that they may be interested in talking to Andy Kennedy once this season is over. And, nothing solid on that, just some scuttlebutt that's on the streets of Memphis right now. So that's something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. The Ole Miss softball team split a doubleheader down in Hattiesburg yesterday to Southern Miss, losing game one 2-1 before coming back and winning game 10-1. Those Rebels are now 9-3 on the season. I was really hoping for the doubleheader sweep down there yesterday against the Southern Miss team that, frankly, is just not very good. But Ole Miss off to a 9-3 start on the softball diamond. That's something to keep your eye on. Of course, the real test do not begin until SEC play starts, as very often that is the case with women's sports. You can see the women's basketball team ran off to a pretty good record non-conference this year, and then SEC play starts, and there you go. So we'll see if these softball Rebels are for real once SEC play rolls around. But 9-3, so congratulations to Coach Smith and his team for getting off to such a hot start. David DeLucci set to join us here momentarily. We're excited about that and looking forward to having David on the broadcast with us this morning as well. Well, Dave,
and, David,
on right now.
Well, David just called into the show. Ready to welcome him on to the show, David?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, David, how are you?
David,
I'm doing great.
Joining
good morning.
Us this morning. You're with Dave Bevan, David Johnson, and Michael Quirk, and we really appreciate your time. And Michael covers the baseball Rebels for us here at Rebels 247. So we're going to kind of let him lead on interrogating you this morning, but we really do thank you for giving us a little bit of your time and joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate having me on the show.
David, as a former outfielder, you have to appreciate sort of what you've seen from this team so far and the athleticism and sort of the raw ability of the outfielders on this team, that they can go about five deep with guys who can play out there.
Yeah, I think it's a major positive for Coach Bianco this year. As you said, the athleticism is just really impressive. Anytime that you can run an outfield that has speed and range and powerful throwing arms, it helps your pitching staff a lot. And from top to bottom, whether it's outfield or infield, these guys can really play defense. We've already seen it in the opening weekend. J.B. Woodman has thrown out a runner at home plate. They've thrown out guys trying to go to third base. So I'm very, very impressed with the athleticism that the outfield is showing.
There are a little bit of question marks on the rotation. Only Brady Bramlett returned. All three starters, Sean Johnson, Chad Smith, and Brady Bramlett, had some off-season surgery on their throwing arms. What do you see from this rotation? Do you think it's enough to really make a run in SEC play?
I actually do, and I know that it's early in this young season, but you know what you're going to get out of Brady, and his surgery in just removing bone chips is nothing major. That's quite common. What that'll do is that will allow him to pitch free of pain, and possibly he can up his pitch count during the games. Chad Smith is a super prospect with a very, very high ceiling. And I just think between him and Sean Johnson, they just need to get innings under their belts, and they need to become more relaxed on the field early in the season. They've still got the butterflies flapping around in their stomach. But I really think that Brady's setting the tone for an SEC weekend is going to take the pressure off the other two guys. But the key is health. Those guys have all the potential in the world, but they just have to stay healthy, because as the baseball season goes on, it's very trying mentally and physically as well.
Now we have of course have Louisville coming to town, who is as high as number two in the country, also 4-0, and comes stacked with a lot of good players. They have two pitchers, Brendan McKay and Kyle Funkhauser, both of which are projected to go first round in June's draft. What does this do for this Ole Miss lineup, having to go up against such a tough pitching staff so early?
Well, it's going to be a battle of the Titans early on in the season. I mean, I don't know if you look across the country, if you'll see a lineup as complete as what Louisville is going to throw out there. They are really, really strong, and their pitching staff is amazing. I think that it's a great time for the Ole Miss Rebels to play them. They're hot. Their confidence is sky high. I really like the approach that the Rebels have showed at the plate, and better to play these guys now when they're swinging the bats well than to wait till they cool off. So the key to Louisville is not only, you know, jumping out early and then getting that lead, playing good defense, but it's keeping their bats silent too. These guys are loaded from top to bottom. It seems like almost everybody in their starting lineup is either a preseason All-American or projected very high in the upcoming draft. So I think from top to bottom, I think this may be the most complete team in the nation right now.
And you were an All-American at Ole Miss in the 90s. You've seen the Ole Miss program continue to grow under Coach Bianco with the facilities and the depth of talent that's coming in and sort of Ole Miss getting to its place among the elite in the SEC. What's it like for you to see sort of the growth of the program over the last 20 or so years?
Well, I love it. I think it's great. I'm very proud of where the program is today. I'm very happy that Coach Bianco is having the success. He is a fantastic coach. And this is something that as all former players back in the day really looked at Ole Miss and said, why can't we be that program? Why can't we do that here? Across the SEC, you've seen some really big improvements, and we knew that Ole Miss had the potential, and it's you know, I was telling someone the other day, it's now on the map. And I remember when I was playing in the major leagues and they would announce me on TV and they would say David DeLucci from the University of Mississippi. Well, now it's Ole Miss. Now Ole Miss is a household name. So we don't go by the University of Mississippi anymore. And that means a lot. That means that this is a brand that is nationwide. This is a program that people know about when you say Ole Miss, and they realize it's not only a good team, but it's a great program. And it is a very good place to play ball, and it's much easier to recruit when you have that label.
Absolutely. I have a bit of a question for you with regards to your professional career. You were on the Arizona Diamondbacks World Series team when Luis Gonzalez obviously had that historic hit up the middle. What was sort of that win like to get that World Series ring and such a dramatic series over a team like the Yankees, which were stacked in that year, and I believe they were going for their fourth straight World Series.
We a lot of people forget that was also in 2001. That was just after 9/11. So not only was it a big World Series, people watched it because of New York and the tragedy in New York. So we had the whole world watching, and actually, usually fans are against the Yankees. They're like the bad guys of baseball. But that year they became everybody's hero and everybody was wanting them to win. So it was an emotional World Series to be in, especially after what New York City had gone through. And then to win it the way we did in Game 7 was just absolutely surreal. And I think that if you look statistically, we blew them out of every category. I think Game 6, we won 16-1 or something like that. I mean, it wasn't even close, but they kept finding ways to win in New York, and that's what made it so exciting. So that when we went to Arizona, we kept talking about the magic that happens in Yankee Stadium. We told ourselves, why can't we have magic here? And in Game 7, I remember we had the roof open. It started raining, which was really, really odd. Number one, for it to rain in Arizona. Number two, for them to keep the roof open. And I think all the guys just kind of looked around and said, maybe this is our time. Maybe this is the magic coming here. So for Gonzo to get that hit and to win it all and to be a part of it, that's something you dream of as you're a kid playing wiffle ball in the backyard, being in the World Series and winning it, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded. I mean, it didn't happen to me, but it was about as close as can be to watch Gonzo win that game in that fashion. Words can't describe it.
Absolutely. I have one more question for you, but I'd like to kick it to Dave and David if they have anything to ask.
David, I've got a question for you. tell us a little bit about your transition from the field into the broadcast booth. We've heard you're doing an outstanding job providing the color for Ole Miss baseball, and we've heard you on other broadcasts. But how has that transition been for you to go from player to broadcaster?
That's a great question. I appreciate you asking that question. I was asked 4 years ago to fill in for a game in Baton Rouge between Southern and Grambling. And they were looking for a color guy, couldn't find anyone. On down the list came David DeLucci, and I accepted and went out there. And that's how it started, man. I did my prep work. I went to the stadium, nervous as all get out. It was kind of like my first at bat in the major leagues. I was nervous, somewhat scared, and I guess I did pretty well because they had asked me to go back, and it kind of moved on from there. And with the SEC Plus Network and Ole Miss looking for a color guy, it kind of seemed like a good fit. This is not something I ever set out to do. I've had other offers. I've had offers to go to other conferences. I've had offers to do some major league work, and I've turned it down because I love the SEC and I love Ole Miss. Now, if they ask me tomorrow to go home and never come back, you know, I love baseball. I love the collegiate level. I think that it's pure. I think that you get to watch kids that go out there and actually play for each other, and there's mistakes that are made on the field, and that's where I feel I can come in and explain the game to the amateur fan and the amateur about the amateur player. So I love it, but like I said, this is not something I ever dreamed of doing. It just fell in my lap, and hopefully I can keep calling games because I think it's just wonderful.
I want to go off topic here with this next question, and a little bit, I guess, of a personal question for you, but you're married to Rachel Reynolds, a Price is Right model, and you yourself have appeared on my all-time favorite game show a couple of times as well. How's Drew Carey, man? Is he a nice guy? Is he as jovial as he comes across on television?
He is as genuine of a guy as you'll ever meet. And I tell you, he is obviously funny. We all know that just by watching him on TV. But his generosity is absolutely amazing. I've never seen a man more generous. I can fill this podcast up with story after story of what he has done for just random strangers, and what he's done for the people at Price is Right. But he is a great guy. He is very just a very generous man, and he's treated my family so well. I can't say enough about him. What you see on TV, magnify it by 100, and that's what you get in real life.
You know, and I think if I'm remembering right, Drew Carey is a former Marine, if I'm remembering
right.
And, you know, you wouldn't expect that out of the personality that you get out of TV, but a great American is Drew Carey. I'll throw it over to Dave Bevan now. He's been in the bullpen warming up, and I know he's got a question.
Thank you, David, for joining the show. One question that I do have to ask is, you know, looking at the Mike Bianco era at Ole Miss, you know, consistently each year, it just seems like Ole Miss is making the postseason. It almost seems like the expectation each year is, you know, making a regional, possibly moving on to the super regionals. In his time just a few years back, Ole Miss got over that hump of the super regional and into the College World Series. Just in your own words, what, you know, your thoughts on Bianco's era, what he's done for the old Ole Miss baseball program?
I would say that it's hard to describe because first word that comes to mind is amazing, but I don't want to use amazing because amazing sounds like it's unbelievable, right? So I would just say you know, what he has done to come in and completely turn it around, and not only turn it around, because some coaches as we see, especially in the SEC, they'll turn a program around and then they'll call it the rebuilding year, which will last 3 or 4 years and fans will lose patience. Now, you're not going to go to the World Series every single year in college baseball, but to be consistent has been truly incredible to watch. You know, the way to build a winning program, and we've seen this on the football side as well, is it starts at the top. It starts with character, and from character you go down to talent. And that's what Coach Bianco has done. He has in his mind when he goes out to recruit, he's got a type of individual that he wants to bring over here. And from a former player, it makes you feel proud that we're not running a whole bunch of guys out there that are going to get in trouble off the field and are not going to play the game right. So when he gets that character type player and he can play as well, that's a bonus. And there's no letdown. It happens year after year after year. Now, in order for you, it doesn't matter what sport or what level, in order for you to be a championship caliber team, it takes good players, it takes luck, and it takes health. And that doesn't always happen during the course of the season. But if you can stay up and you can be competitive every single year with good guys that you trust and you know what you're going to get out on, well, then that's what Coach has done the last, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 years. So it's the individuals that he's bringing in, and that from there, the sky's the limit.
David, I want to
go ahead.
Oh, you can go ahead, Dave.
Well, I just had one final question for you, David. Individual player that has just really stood out to me so far this year, and that's Tate Blackman, sophomore infielder. You know, just the improvement that he has had over the course of this season has been amazing to see. Just in these four games, he's been a truly impact player. And I just thought it would be interesting from your perspective as a former player, you know, at the collegiate level, and you've been at it in the pros, just, you know, your perspective on the mentality, you know, the mental side of the game that these young athletes have to go through, if you could put that into perspective for us.
Well, it's been extremely impressive, as you said, to watch Tate Blackman in this young season here. Tate is a player that definitely has all the tools to be a great one. And he came in last year with a lot of accolades, a lot of preseason chat about what he was going to be projected to be. And Tate didn't ask for any of that. All he wanted to do was come and everybody put labels on him, fairly or unfairly, they were there. And the more that they started piling up, I think the harder it became for Tate to be Tate and to go out there and play relaxed and enjoy the game. He was always trying to prove himself to a label that was given by someone else. And I
we just lost David. His call just dropped. Hopefully he can call back into the show.
Okay, so some technical difficulties there. We'll see if we can get David back on the line. But, man, what some insight that he is adding, not only on the Ole Miss baseball team and his career, but like what he had to say about Drew Carey. I'm glad to know Drew Carey's a good guy. I've always liked him on television, and that was some interesting commentary there as well. So hopefully David will get back. Michael, I know you wanted to ask David about his charities and all of the great things he does to try to make this world a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of us know about David DiLucci, the player, over 100 career home runs, World Series champion, All-American at Ole Miss. But something that some people may not know about David DiLucci is he's really involved in a lot of different philanthropic areas as far as Special Olympics, Children with AIDS Foundation, Make-A-Wish, Easter Seals. And he actually has his own charity called DiLucci's Dream Foundation, which gives free baseball camps and clinics to Louisiana children of current and past armed service members. So I was hoping to get to allow him to talk a little bit about that. It's something that, like I said, a lot of people may not know about David DeLucci, but he has a real impressive track record of giving back to the community.
Okay, well, apparently we're not going to be able to get David back onto the show. Some technical difficulties there. We apologize for cutting that interview short, but we are very appreciative that David took the time out of his day to join us for this morning's Rebel Rise Live podcast. Guys, we'll go to closing thoughts now. Michael, I'll throw it to you. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I was. It's interesting. Last night I was sort of looking back and thinking about where the Ole Miss football program is now, as opposed to a few years ago, in the press box for the baseball game last night. We were sort of sharing some Houston Nut stories amongst each other, and it's, if you think about the Ole Miss football program, it has to go back to Ashton Kutcher and the butterfly effect. We were going through it, and you have to think of, you know, how Chad Kelly got here, how this current recruiting class got here, helped along by that big 2013 class. And that 2013 class was spurred all by Robert Kimdichie, who likely wouldn't have even considered Ole Miss had it not been for older brother Denzel Kimdichie coming to Ole Miss. And if you sort of go back and think about the sort of train of events that occurred to help Ole Miss to where it is today, it's sort of amazing to think about that that Denzel Kimdichie not being able to sign in February somehow translates to, you know, Ole Miss is now a 10-win team off a Sugar Bowl victory, bringing in a top-5 recruiting class, and is sort of on the forefront of the college football landscape. And it's so different from where this team was in 2011 to where it is now, that we've sort of gotten swept up in, you know, it is the new normal. But you have to think just how abnormal this is when you look back at 2011 and in 2010. And from where Ole Miss was then to where they are now, it's sort of amazing to think about that there's 5-star recruits from all over the country that are now in on Ole Miss. And Ole Miss is in the picture for having a Heisman candidate leading the way, and for also being in the talk for making a third straight New Year's Six Bowl and possibly being in the national championship conversation and knocking out not just – we're not talking about a Mike DuBose or Mike Shula Alabama. I mean, they're beating one of the best dynasties in college football history in consecutive years. And it's just amazing to think about where the team is now, and that so much of it, obviously you give the roster of 85 players and down on the scout team a lot of credit, and of course Hugh Freeze and the coaching staff a ton of credit, but sort of the effect that Denzel Kimdichie not being able to sign and sort of having limited options and going to Ole Miss in June, how that has really spurred a chain of events that has led to where we are now.
Certainly, that's certainly the case. It is amazing, and you're right. We've referenced the butterfly effect before on this program, and you just never know how one event will translate to other happenings and what one thing means to another. Okay, Dave Bevan, your closing thoughts.
You know, I'm looking outside the window right now, guys, and I'm just glad to see sunshine and not dreary rain and had the thunderstorms over the past couple of days, and just glad that is all out of the way. It was cold last night, but it's good to see in the forecast that these warmer days look promising over the next couple of days, and great baseball weather. I'm excited that baseball season is back around Ole Miss. You know, they had a great weekend. The team's 4-0 right now, very exciting, and it's going to be interesting to see this upcoming match against Louisville. And it's like, you know, David, our guest today put it in great perspective that, you know, it's great to see Ole Miss play them now when they're hyped up, motivated. Ole Miss had a great win last night. Came from behind, but great teams have to do that. They have to get into those situations to prove themselves and to win it in walk off fashion. That was exciting to see. So looking forward to some baseball this weekend.
Okay, I don't really have a closing thought as much as a closing question for Michael and Dave here. And we'll just do this right out in the open in front of everyone. I got a great picture of David DeLucci, his wife Rachel, and Drew Carey on set at The Price is Right. You think this ought to be up on the front page of Rebels 247 with this podcast? You guys got
I think any time that we can get Drew Carey on the front of the website, I think that's a positive. If Ryan Stiles, a fellow Drew Carey Show alumnus, if we were able to throw him up there, I was a big fan of him on Whose Line Is It Anyway, that would make it even better. But, David DeLucci, he was the star of the podcast. It was great having him on. I think he's got to be involved in the front picture in some way.
So David DeLucci, David's wife Rachel, and Drew Carey, about to be on the front page of Rebels 247, probably will be the most unusual photo we've ever ran on the front page of Rebels 247, simply because it's Drew Carey and The Price is Right, not that it's David or Rachel. But what do you say? We'll just play it edgy today, and that's the photo we'll use when we post this podcast up. So your bonus today, if you listen to the entire podcast, there's the story behind the Drew Carey photo on the front page of the Rebel Ryan's Live podcast this morning. Pays to listen all the way to the end. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. We want to again thank our very special guest, David DeLucci, joining us for this Rebel Ryan's Live podcast. So for Dave Bevan, Michael Quirk, and 247 Sports, I'm David Johnson, and as always, hotty-totty.